This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our January 3rd, 2018 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are all here to help you become an above average investor. And job number one is helping you reduce your mistakes. And it is so much more difficult to recover from an investing misstep than it is to just avoid making them in the first place. And that goes with just a little bit of education. And that's what we are here to do on today's show, as always, is to educate our audience, you, our audience, and try to make sure that you are up to speed on current events, current market conditions, the current secular and cyclical trends that are going on in the marketplace, and hopefully uncover some opportunities for you and help you avoid those missteps that I just talked about. Now, Invest Talk is a conversation, and we try to bring some useful information to the table each and every weekday. But you bring your questions and your concerns, and those are always most helpful. And even if it's only answering your question, we try to broaden that out to give every listener a little bit of knowledge and insight that will help them as well. Now today we're going to talk about making adjustments to reducing risk in your retirement portfolio and just your retirement strategy overall. So we have a 5-point plan to protect yourself from risk in 2018. But of course, you drive the topic with your calls. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's get to the phones right now. We're trying to answer your questions live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. Or you can leave your question on our 24-hour listener line. As always, that's 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. And we're going to start off with a live caller. We're going to talk to Victor in New Jersey. How you doing, Victor?
Okay, Happy New Year to you, Justin.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you. I'm on the Charles Schwab website. And just for example, I'm on the Exxon page, their search page. Now, there's something I don't understand. It says key fundamentals. P.E., then in parentheses, it has TTM. Then it has P.E. forecasted. Then something I've never seen before, non-GAAP EPS. I have no idea what these acronyms are. I wonder if you could help shed some light for me.
Gotcha. Well, the TTM is trailing 12 months. So that's taking the last four quarters of earnings and saying, okay, that's the last year of earnings for Exxon, and taking that divided by the current market cap or price per share, and you're getting that PE ratio based on the trailing 12-month earnings. Then there's obviously the forecasted earnings. That's the second one you talked about, is what probably the average analyst estimates are for the coming year for Exxon. And then non-GAAP is non-generally accepted accounting principles. So this is something that got really big in the late 90s with tech stocks, and there was basically, they make up their own rules is what that means, is we're going to tell you what we really think our earnings are, not really based on what the generally accepted accounting principles are. And the way each company does it, you know, is kind of really up to them. It's not something I would pay attention to. I think it's kind of nonsense. Okay. But there are certain reasons why one may argue it's more accurate than GAAP earnings, which is what trailing 12 month is going to be based on.
So that non-GAAP, I don't really have to pay too much attention to that at all, though.
I wouldn't. I mean, it takes a lot of context to understand what that means, right? Is what principles are they using? If they're not using generally accepted accounting principles, what are the principles they are using, and why is that relevant to their business in particular? Now, there can be arguments made for it, but I think usually they're very, very weak, and you really need to understand the concepts of that company and that industry and the principles they're using overall. So for you, I just would ignore it and not really pay attention to it.
All right. Thank you very much.
No problem, Victor. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Manif in the Bay Area. How you doing?
Hey, my name is Mihir. I am calling from Bay Area. I wanted your opinion on Mallinckrodt PLC. Stock symbol is M for Mike, N for Nancy, K for Kite.
Okay.
Is it a good time to pick up some stocks of this company?
Oof. So this is a UK-based developer of branded pharmaceuticals that treat a wide variety of health conditions. Mallinckrodt is the name, tough one to say. It is located in the UK, about a $2.2 billion company, but that's because they're down about 90% from their high, right? Not about 90, but
right.
Call 80-plus percent. Their high back in 2015 was somewhere around $130 a share. Now we're trading at $23.51 a share. And the reason is because earnings were $7 a share, but now they're going down, but they're not going down that much. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Do you know about their drug cliff by any chance, if there's things that are coming off patent for them?
No, I haven't heard of anything, but it seems like it is bouncing back since the last couple of weeks. So.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I say bounce. It had a big drop and it was oversold. And so, yes, it is, I guess I could qualify that as bouncing back. But the question is it bouncing back strong enough to make me excited about the name? And I'm going to say no. I don't think the strength is really there for that. This is a complex one. The drug industry in the whole is going through, is reshaping itself because of pressure from governments. I've been talking about this for a while. And this is a name that looks like it might be caught up in that. I've never heard of it, to be frank. And I really need to dig deep on, you know, do they have patent cliffs, or do they have pressure from governments to reduce prices, or they have lawsuits? Let me look at their debt level. Financial leverage is about 3, you know, not crazy high. They still have positive cash flow. You know, from a fundamental perspective, it doesn't look horrible. You know, PE is 3. Revenue is down 11% year over year, earnings down 3% year over year, trading at about a half of book value. But I just see too much uncertainty with the industry, and technically it looks absolutely putrid. I would need to dig deeper, and from a technical perspective, I just wouldn't touch it.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. The first step in managing risk is to know how much risk is appropriate for you. How much risk do you feel comfortable with? Well, we have a free tool to help you learn the answer to that question. It is our free risk analysis on investtalk.com. Just look for the InvestTalk tab. So how can we make adjustments that will reduce risk in our retirement portfolio? We'll look at that today, plus I have some other topics as well, such as 9 questions you need to ask about your 401k plan. These are important points. The 401k is vast majority of people's number one savings vehicle, and it is a great savings vehicle, not always a great investment vehicle. But we're going to talk about both points of that. I also want to talk about 5 money mistakes to avoid in the new year, and then some simple strategies to help you get the most out of life. And there's some steps that you need to take, and it's not always simple, but having a plan, just like anything, will get you a lot further along in achieving whatever goals that you might have. So those are the things that are on my mind today. Let's take a quick look at the market today. I did see the Dow was up about 98 points. you had a large cap growth was the best. So the kind of the Netflixes and Facebooks of the world and Googles of the world did the best so far to start the year, which is kind of a continuation of last year. Now, typically, what did best the previous year doesn't tend to do best the next year, just to be aware, even though the first 2 days aren't an indication of that. The S&P was up 17 today, the NASDAQ up 58. Small caps were only up a modest amount, 0.17%, pretty modest compared to the larger indexes. So large cap stocks definitely did better than small cap stocks today. And we had the jobs report, the ADP jobs report that came in positive, but we're going to get the real jobs report on Friday for the month of December. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, Steve. Best of a new year. This is Mike from Louisville, Kentucky. I got a question about what to do with Pacific Gas and Electric, PCG. Bought it a few days ago because it looked like it was a decent price. And as you know, it took a hit of about 17% in 1 day today. So what do? You stick it out and hope for it to return in time, dilute your loss by selling some of it, or do you simply get out of it and put your money elsewhere that will at least have some gain, some dividends over the next probably 1 or 2 or 3 years? I know that takes a long time because many, many years ago, I had the misfortune of owning Three Mile Island / Metropolitan Edison / General Public Utilities, which is stock. So I know it takes a while. So what are your thoughts and help us out? Have a great day. Love your show.
Well, I think you answered your own question. This is PG&E Corporation. They did suspend their dividend because of potential liabilities from California fires in Northern and Central California. And there's a lot of worry that there's going to be lawsuits that put them at fault for some of these fires. There's really not been a lot of evidence to show that they were the ones to cause it, and they have about an $800 million liability policy that should cover most, if not all, the claims. But you know, there's still a lot of uncertainty, and markets don't like uncertainty, and PG&E doesn't have a lot of certainty as well, because these type of things do tend to drag out for a while. And so you kind of answer your question. If you have a long-term time horizon, I think this is a good time to pick up the stock, and I think you'll be fine, because I don't think they really caused it, and it's going to be very hard to prove that they did. You know, Three Mile Island, I think, was pretty simple. There was a leak, and it was from their plant, and that was kind of an open and shut case where this is far from it, but it could take many years for it to really play out, right? To figure out whether this is something that will hamper the company longer term. I think short, medium term absolutely will, cloud hanging over it. But I think ultimately this will prove to be a good time to pick up the stock long term, but you're going to have to be patient. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, keeping an eye on trends to carry over to 2018. There are growth stocks, which are shares of tend to be fast-growing companies that trade at a premium. The question is always, how much premium should they trade for? Oh, we should trade at some premium, but how much? And then there's value stocks, or shares of beaten down or overlooked companies that may not have spectacular growth, but still have solid businesses. Which kind will prevail in 2018? Let's talk about it. Check in now with your money question at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve. New to both investing and your podcast, but loving both. I'll be listening for the answer, so thanks. In short, so long as I have a 6-month emergency fund with a bank that's fully liquid, should I invest any actual physical cash I've saved up over the years? Brief background. I'm new to investing. I work in the nightlife industry, and over the years, in addition to savings with a bank and small investments with Vanguard and recently Wealthfront, I've saved up just over $60,000 in actual cash that is sitting in a safety deposit box. I've always considered that an emergency fund. As I've gotten older, married, made a family, grew my income, etc., I have started to look at this lump of actual cash as perhaps unnecessary. Would you say that that amount of actual cash is losing money by sitting there due to inflation? If I am comfortable with our income and our emergency fund that's with the bank, should I take this actual cash and invest it? Another way of looking at this might be, is there any need for actual hard cash reserves like this? Thanks for all the awesome information you give to new people like me.
That's a great question. There are plenty of people out there that have cash under the mattress, is the more of the colloquialism. But, you know, should you take that cash and invest it? You know, $60,000, you know, the typical recommendation is 3 to 6 months of expenses saved in a rainy day fund, right? Something that's very liquid. You shouldn't expect to get a lot of return out of it. So putting in a safety deposit box is probably not the worst thing in the world, especially with rates so low today. Obviously, it'd be nice to get a little bit of interest, but risk-free, you're probably not going to get much, so I don't think you're really losing out on a ton. So I would say, what is $60,000 3 to 6 months of expenses? I would probably, with such a large amount, I would probably err on the six-month side and then take any balance and put that money to work. In whether that's an IRA, Roth IRA, start saving that way. In a Roth IRA, what's nice is you can take out whatever you've put in to that at any time. So it's kind of also a savings fund as well that you can get access to. Obviously, you want to make that more of a last resort, but that's probably the first avenue I would go down with that excess cash. So in the end, I don't think you're really killing yourself by having that money there. It's always nice to have that confidence that if you ever just need cash, you can go get it. You might want to put that in a safe in your home. It might be a better way to do it if it's just going to be cash sitting there as opposed to a bank, which, you know, you never know what can happen with that. Not to scare you or anything, but, you know, it's always nice to have it in your home. So that's kind of my take. Definitely want to put some of that money to work, but I don't think having that as your rainy day fund is the worst thing in the world, especially with rates so low. Now let's get to our 5-point plan to protect your portfolio from risk in 2018. Now the first is, going back to this last caller, make sure you are saving enough. You know, the hardest and most important part of any risk plan is being honest about your whole life balance sheet, financial life balance sheet. You know, losing your job can be catastrophic for many. You know, I think it's roughly half of people in the, more than half of people in the country live paycheck to paycheck. So if they lost their paycheck, they would suddenly have difficulty paying their bills, probably have to destroy their credit. And, you know, the best thing you can do to reduce that risk is to build enough savings to last 3 to 6 months, like I said earlier. Now, once you have enough emergency savings put away, then it's time to look at how much you need to save for retirement, how much you have, start creating a plan. And that goes to number two, is setting financial goals. So we rarely get to where we want to be without a destination in mind. Okay, think about when in life, when you're trying to get, when you're driving a car from point A to point B, if you don't have that destination in your mind or in your GPS, the odds are you're probably not going to get where you really want to be. You're going to end up somewhere random. So we often save and invest without well-defined goals. And so really what you need to do is start to create those goals, specific goals, and this will increase your odds that you will achieve it. So goal-based investing is more than putting aside as much as you can trying to generate the highest possible return on the investment. It's saving towards a goal and picking the correct investment strategy for that particular goal. If it's a long-term goal, you can be more aggressive. You can you can create a plan that has a longer time horizon and probably more volatility. If it's a shorter-term goal, a year, 2, 3 years out, you need to be much more conservative with your strategy, right? So, you know, it depends on what those goals are, and that's something we help clients with, is earmarking different assets for different particular strategies. And then you also need to then go reshuffle that allocation regularly. So if it's set it and forget it type of thing, you still need to rebalance at least once a year, and I think you'll be in a much better place going forward with that plan. Now, coming up on the next Invest Talk, 10 steps to successful income investing for beginners. That's one of our topics on the next Invest Talk. But what's your topic today? My direct line between 4 to 5 Pacific time is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues now. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial. We make many money choices, of course, and we try to be objective, look at the facts, look at our life situation. Some people choose to work with a registered investment advisor to help them in this pursuit, and one of the most important reasons is to be defensive, keeping risk at a minimum. It's not only a way to share the worry, it becomes a practical matter. A professional advisor has the resources and the experience. They study the market. They anticipate what might happen. For more than 20 years, KPP Financial has been serving clients all across America, and they're accessible, responsive, and maybe most important, the KPP principals invest right along with their clients. Parallel investing. To find out more about it and their programs, go to investtalk.com, click on the investment tab. Now let's continue with the podcast. This is Invest Talk, a place to meet, talk about your money, how to keep more of it, and make it grow. Bring your questions to Justin right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Josh. I'm from Oceanside. I got two questions for you guys. First off, what are your thoughts on CELG, Celgene Corporation? Would you buy it now at this price? You know, looking for a medium to long-term investment. And second question is, I'm looking to get out of the military next year and would like to pursue a career in finance. Listening to you guys reading on the subject has given me great insights, and I thoroughly enjoy the subject. I already have a bachelor's degree. I was hoping you could give me some advice on how to break into the industry as a 30-year-old. Your thoughts are greatly appreciated. Thank you.
All right, well, I'll start at the end with the second question. He already has a bachelor's degree, so he's already graduated from college. You're probably going to get a lot of pitches from the big brokerage houses, Morgan and Merrill, and you know, and those about 85-90% of people that go through that training program after the first 3 years drop out because it's just simply hard to do what we do. You're kind of controlled by them, and you're really taking orders from the people at the top. And that's not the greatest working environment for you or your clients. So either typically what I say is if anyone goes through those programs is to plan your way out into the independent space, and more advisors are going independent as opposed to being under the big umbrella of the big shops, you know, independent like us over at KPP. So that's kind of my advice. There's some positives I think you'll get out of it, but it's just a stepping stone to kind of do your own thing. If you want to go in the financial advisory space, there's obviously the investment banking space. There's a lot of ways that you can go in finance. And if you want to talk a little bit more off air, don't hesitate to shoot me an email. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. But let's talk a little bit about Celgene. This is a biotech firm, one of the largest out there, $86 billion market cap. They develop therapies to treat cancer, immune, inflammatory diseases by regulating cells, genes, and proteins. They earn about $7.33 last year. Now that we're in 2018, I can say that. And that's the estimate, at least. Obviously, the fourth quarter hasn't been reported. This year, they're supposed to make $8.73, and the stock has fallen decently from a high 52-week high, about $147 a share. Now at $109, 52-week low is $94 a share, which it reached sometime last month. And so it's getting a little bounce from an oversold condition, and what's happening is this is a growth name whose growth is slowing. A couple years ago, revenues were up 23% and earnings were up in the mid 20% range. Now, last quarter, revenues were only up 10% and earnings were up 21%. So you're seeing growth slow a little bit, and any growth name whose growth slows, there tends to be a reduction in the P multiple, and that's what you're seeing happening. Now, from a business standpoint, they're still doing very well. $4.5 billion free cash flow levels, which I like, which is very nice on an $80 billion company. You know, about a 5% free cash flow yield, not bad for a company that's growing. But is that growth going to continue to slow would be my worry. Enterprise value to EBIT is about 18.5, which is, for a growth name, not super high, but not, you know, rock bottom or super exciting either. Operating earnings yield about 5%. Let's look at their debt. Their financial leverage is about 3, but that's been coming down from about 4.5 in 2015. So they're paying down some of their debt, which I like. Return on invested capital has always ranged in the high teens, also very attractive. So I like Celgene. I don't think it's particularly overvalued or undervalued at this level. Technically, it's probably going to, these things tend to kind of go in threes. You already did one big drop. My guess is you'll probably have a couple more stumbles before you find that ultimate bottom. So anytime it dips back below $100 a share, I might initiate a position. 90, I'd say in the 80s, I would really love to own Celgene. But 109, it's kind of at value, and I would look for a little bit more of a discount on Celgene. CELG is the symbol. Now let's talk about your 401k plan, and let's answer some questions, or let's try to help you answer some questions. So about your 401k plan, and the majority of people have one out there, and this can apply to your 403b. And know that when I talk about 401k or our active 401k program that we have for listeners and clients, this applies to 403bs and any employee-sponsored plan. Okay, they're most of them are very similar. TSPs are kind of their own thing, but you know this kind of applies to them as well. Now, even if you have mediocre investments to choose from, the tax-deferred nature of 401ks, 529s, or 403bs, etc., are very, very attractive. So your odds are you're going to get a lot more out of it than you put in. Now, with that being said, about 30% of eligible workers don't participate in their 401k. So don't be one of those 30%. It's really hard to overstate the risk of not saving enough. When we talk about reaching your financial goals, savings is a number one. It's great to find good investments, and obviously if you hit the Bitcoin when it was at $5 a coin, then you know those things can happen, and so your savings doesn't really matter that much. But most of us aren't smart enough for that, or maybe stupid enough. I don't know. I don't know how to say it. But the fact is, saving is most important. And you can't take out a loan for retirement when you get there. You need to have enough to get you through. So even if you can't afford to save the maximum amount you can put in a 401k, which is $18,000 a year, make sure you are contributing as much as you can afford to and at least the company match. Okay, so here's a checklist that can help you ensure you get the most out of your company retirement plan. Now, first is, does your employer plan have auto enrollment? Oftentimes, many do. It puts you in a target date fund, which if you've listened for any length of time, you know we're not super high on target date funds overall. They're a nice positive iteration, but they certainly aren't the end-all be-all. And auto enrollment tends to have the number of people who don't participate in the plan from 30% to 15%, which is nice. But you also got to make sure that just because you're auto-rolled in a plan doesn't mean that you're it's set up the way it should be. First off, the average deferral is only 3%, which is very common, of your paycheck. In fact, you should be saving about 10 to 15%. And once again, you're probably opted into a targeted fund, which may or may not be right for you in particular based on your risk tolerance and your investment options in the plan, okay? So that's number one. Then auto-escalation. Many plans allow this, where you can increase your deferral amount by 1% each year. I think that's a great way to set it up. You kind of set it and forget it. Odds are you're going to get some sort of raise every year, if it's 1% or 10% or 20%. Hopefully it's one of the latter two. But if so, that extra 1% deferral, you're not going to feel it if you continue to get raises. Then three, does your company offer a match? Always make sure you aim to contribute at least as much as the match. We talk about that all the time. Know the cost, know what your fund costs are. Weak fund choices and high fees can make plans less attractive, but it doesn't mean you don't invest in them. You don't put money into them, right? So you want to make sure, also number five is that you're not saddled with high administrative costs. And depending on your plan size, big plans tend to have lower fund costs or plan costs. Small plans tend to have high plan costs as a percentage. Now, anything above 1% that's passed on to you is probably way too high. Anything above 0.5, you should start to think about and look at why it's so high. But make sure that you look into that and ask your HR department, what are the plan administrative costs and who's paying it? Sometimes it's the employer that's paying it. Sometimes it's the employees. Then have your allocations gotten out of whack? You need to make sure and check on your allocation at least once, twice a year. Our active 401k program will update subscribers at least quarterly and give them allocation recommendations, and I think that is most effective, especially depending on current market conditions, can really determine whether you should be more aggressive, less aggressive, but keep it all within your particular risk tolerance. And that's what we love about the active 401k program. So make sure you rebalance regularly. And the great thing about 401ks, it's tax deferred. So if you're selling winners and you're taking gains, you're not paying any tax on that. So rebalancing is even more attractive in a 401k than a non-tax deferred account. And then, are you making the right contribution type? Should you be doing a Roth 401k? Many plans allow that now. You should definitely be looking into that, seeing if that is going to be right for you. And then lastly, beneficiary designations. Make sure those are up to date. You don't want to pass away suddenly and your money going to the wrong people. You don't want that to be a trust usually. You want to go directly to the individuals that you want to have that money. It could be a spouse, could be a child. At least no matter what, if you have a major life change, you need to look at that beneficiary designation. So hopefully that helps you understand how you should look at your 401k plan and changes you should make in the new year. Now, in a financial world that gets more complex every day, KPP financial programs are designed to simplify the individual investment process. No matter where your priorities lie, KPP has a strategy that fits your needs and to help you feel more comfortable in achieving your retirement goals. Find out more, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
One of the most popular topics on Invest Talk is real estate, mostly because so many people have a stake in it. But real estate questions can be very specific, usually related to the person's individual situation. Or maybe the questions are about investing in real estate. Well, now there's another source of answers for your real estate questions. Just ask Justin. Our own Justin Klein is a licensed real estate consultant and can give you a professional opinion. Get a note to him about your question on investtalk.com. Just click on Contact Justin, and he will get back to you.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Longtime listener and podcast. Love the show. Thanks for everything you guys do. Hey, I have a question here. Hopefully you guys could help me out with, please. I'm looking at some of your basic material stocks to get into here for the future, from the building and stuff that Trump wants to do on infrastructure. I've been looking at U.S. Steel, ticker symbol X, and Nucor. I'm not sure on the ticker symbol there, but I believe the spelling is N-U-C-O-R, Nucor Steel. I looked at some numbers, and am I thinking Nucor looks like the better buy? It has a higher dividend, and the P.E. is a little bit lower, not as lofty as U.S. Steel's is. I know that Nucor, I think, has more of a wide basis of things it does other than steel, rather than U.S. Steel is more focused, I guess you could say. So Nucor is more diverse of a company. Both of them look, from what I've looked at other reports now, both of them look to be buys right now. And I'm just wondering, looking at numbers, Nucor looks like the better company fundamentally. Would you agree with this? Does Nucor look to be more of a sound, stable company than U.S. Steel, I guess, at this point? Thank you for any analysis and thoughts you can give me on this. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I think you have it spot on. I think Nucor is the better buy for a few reasons. One, the main reason I look at is profitability, and their return on invested capital tends to range in the mid to high single digits, which isn't spectacular, but it's actually pretty good for the basic material industry, you know, the kind of commodity space that tends to be low margin and low profitability. So not too bad. And they've made money every year since 2010. You can see if you're on our YouTube live stream, whereas United Steel X, they've lost money many years of the last 8, and you know, they've had one really good year, 2014, but they've lost money in many of those other years, and the dividend yield's only 0.5%, where Nucor is about 2.3%. And so I agree with you. I think Nucor is the better company. I'm not sure how much more diversified they are, but I think you're right, they are a little more diversified than U.S. Steel. So their revenues are growing. Is it, would I say it's faster? Yeah, looks like revenues are growing about the same, but they're a bunch more profitable. Revenue earnings supposed to go 26% in 2018 for Nucor, and U.S. Steel 40, but still from a much lower base. So I like NUE much better from a short and long-term perspective, but I think both aren't particularly attractive from a valuation perspective, but they have good momentum. But if I'm picking one or the other over the other, I'm definitely picking Nucor. N-U-E is the symbol. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I'd like to get your question in before we're up for the day. We only have about 8 more minutes left in the show. We're about to go to break. So whether you're a beginner or advanced investor, no matter what question you have, get into our final segment of the day at 888-99-CHART. That is our direct line.
Hi, I'm calling about AMD. Wanted to know your opinion. I have 3 positions with an average price of $10.50. And just recently had a good run. Just wondering if it's time to pull some out or just stay in and continue to let it run. Thank you, and forward to looking for your answer. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at Advanced Micro Devices. They design microprocessors, embedded media and graphic processors, and chipsets for computers and consumer electronic products. They're about $11 billion company, and they've had a massive run from December 2015. It was trading roughly $1.50 or so, and now we're at $11.55. Its 52-week high, though, is $15.65, so it certainly dropped a little bit. They have a good amount of debt, which worries me. They've had a few losing years over the past 5 or 6. Even though their revenues are up 26% year over year, and their earnings are up 233% year over year, but that's from a very low base, so that makes it look very, very attractive. They're only going to make $13 and 13 cents a share last year. Going to make 36 cents this year. So even at 36 cents, you're talking about a PE somewhere north of 40, so something like that. Somewhere in that range. Still pretty high, and they're kind of all over the place. You know, they made 50 cents a share in 2011, but then they lost 16 cents a share in 2012. So I don't like the consistency. The return on equity has always been very choppy and all over the place, and never particularly high from return on invested capital standpoint. Free cash flow is negative $200 million over the trailing 12 months. I don't like that. It's operating earnings yields 1%. Don't like that. Their financial leverage is about 7. Don't like that. I would stay away from it. It's extremely expensive. They have a lot of debt. They don't have a history of having consistent profits. They don't pay a dividend. I just don't like it. And they expect fourth quarter 2007 revenue to decrease about 15%, it looks like. So this is a company whose results are all over the place historically, and you're buying it near the end of the recent run. So I would take any profits you have, get out of the vast majority of your position, if not all. I do not like AMD here at all. 8899 chart, 8899242478. Let's finish off with a talking point, which let's talk about 5 money mistakes to avoid in 2018. The first is to stop saving your leftovers. Start planning how much you save. So many people say, oh, well, I have this much left over. I'm going to put X amount into this account or whatever. Set it up. Make it automatic, just like your 401k. You have your 401k automatic savings. Have all your other savings like your IRA, etc. You know, we can do that for clients. Is we can set up automatic transfers from their bank account into their IRA, Roth IRA, TD Ameritrade on a regular basis, and that's probably what you should be doing as well. So decide on the amount you want to set aside each month and set up that automatic transfer. Number 2, stop using painless payments. Pay a little bit more with cash. I know we talk about rewards for credit cards, and I love them as well. But try to force yourself to re-enter your credit card number each time you make an online purchase. I know it's nice to have that saved, but to be frank, it's always better to feel that pain when you're paying, and try to do that a little bit more in 2018. Number 3, stop being silent about your money. Research shows that the more we talk about our money, the more confident we are and the more information we have to make better money decisions. So talk about it with your friends, your family, etc., with your inner circle. So there's a couple more, but I think that's a great place to stop for this hour. Hope you learned something. We're going to wrap it up. And a reminder, if you're not near our California offices, Steve or I can meet you via Skype or telephone for one-on-one retirement portfolio reviews. It's really easy. Also, Steve will be in San Jose for individual retirement meetings on February 7th. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, thank you for being with us for this hour. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.